Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello there, everybody. You're very welcome indeed to the Game on Sunday podcast. Michael Lester here with you again. Also joined, as usual, by Tomás Volcahi, who's here with us. We have a special guest again this week, and I'm so delighted that he's joining us because, as a Galway person, and I have to say, it feels like I come from the football side of Galway. But back in the day, back in, let's say, the mid-70s through to the 80s and whatever, the best of days that Galway people had were from their hurlers and the success that they had back in those days. And we'll talk about that in a moment. The reason that I'm mentioning that is because central to all that was the manager of the time, Cyril Farrell. And Cyril is our special guest here on the podcast this week. Cyril, it's so good to talk to you. How are you keeping, my man? How are things?
Good, now, good. Good to see you all again. I can see yourself and Tomás. You're keeping well.
Actually, look, we're doing our best. Let's recap on those days because, as I said a second ago there, Cyril, growing up in Galway, it was football from my side of the county anyway. And then through the 70s, the hurlers kind of came on the scene. What do you think involved all that and made that kind of beginning of a change, if you like?
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing that happened was that there was a hurling board set up, Mike, and kind of deal with hurling, more or less, just to concentrate on the hurling. And for a while, Gal were involved with Munster, getting no success at all, and they got out of Munster and started improving the underage, kind of got academies going. And that probably would be the start of it. And it was a step to another 21 final. E.G. Clark, Joe McDonough, that gang were on that. 73 were beaten in the minor final, and 75 the seniors won a league final. And that time, a league final would be very, very big. And after that, then things started to move. In 78, I was involved myself in one and under 21 final. And 79 were beaten in the senior final. But slowly but surely, the young fellas were coming through onto with the older, much more mature guys on the team. And the hurling was getting stronger and stronger from then on, really.
I suppose,
Sir, could I just come in there? Michael, you mentioned about Munster.
Yeah.
Did you not like coming out to Munster?
Well, I tell you, Tomás.
Go on, give us the real reason. Go on, were you in charge?
I wasn't in charge, but it was very simple. Like that time, it was a few here on the team. They'd meet on a Tuesday and Thursday, 2 weeks before the game, and Tuesday and Thursday again, and didn't expect to win matches. Like, they weren't even giving themselves a chance. So that I think they only won once in Munster. That time, always seems well, it was not out. Now we'd like to get a few games. That time, we only got one.
Yeah.
So they were back on their own. But like, the work was was going in at a certain level, but wasn't kind of structured. After that, a hurling board was set up, and it kind of just concentrated, the hurling board concentrated hurling lower.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I just thought you might have been afraid and you wanted to get out of there as quick as you came down. Yeah.
Well,
Mulcahy.
Go on, you're coming from a football background, old Lester. You just made it very clear about that. Go on.
I just want to say something to you. Back in those days that we're talking about here, the Cyril Farrell era, if you like, through the late 70s into the end of 1980s and that kind of stuff, we didn't fear going anywhere. We could have gone to Munster. We could have gone anywhere we liked. And we would have beaten them. And we did.
Yeah, well, the thing was that time, you see, when we did get eventually a kind of a fairy team going, like if you met Cork or met Tip or whether you met Kilkenny or Wexford or Offaly, you were meeting them like at a semi-final level and they already had won their championship. They had their kind of their weakness covered over. So you were actually meeting whoever came out was a good team. The system is completely different now.
Totally different. And Mr. Lester, how many months of championships did you win?
We never won any. We only won one game in the Munster.
Sorry, Tomás. You phrased that incorrectly, by the way, there. How many college championships did we win?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Well, now go on. We want a full afternoon now for that, right? Just we want a full afternoon. Yeah.
That's where you're coming from, anyway. Like you're actually, Tomás, coming from a training ground, and you were hoping to have everything right. You know, mainly the base would be at the right. You'd be using other pitches, but like you'd have to be very, very right to beat the Munster or Leinster champions. You know what I mean?
They were absolutely, sir. I agree with you totally. And could, like. Who was behind the change to decide that this has to stop? We've got to get our own house in order. You mentioned schools, underage.
Yeah, I'd say there was a Frank Fahey, Jerry Clarty. I'm going way back now, like just before my, but they kind of could see that they were kind of going, loved the hurling, but going nowhere, you know, that kind of way. And definitely, like Joe McDonough was involved in when he went back to brought a group together back to Connemara. Unheard of at the time, but the young hurlers just to get together could improve them. But it was after that that the big follow-up came, you know, like that the change came and you had the structures and then like slowly but surely it started to improve. But it took a long time. Like.
The first, to us, by the way, just to mention to you, the first time, I'm not saying that it's the first time, but one of the first times I saw Galway hurlers play was, this was before you, Cyril, by the way. My father was a huge GAA man and he'd go to anything. Kind of, he'd go to kind of, a junior match, the other side of the world, kind of, you know. But I remember going down with him one day to Roscommon to see Galway play Roscommon in, do you remember the swamp?
Yeah, I do.
The old pitch, Tomás, in,
yeah.
which is not where it is now and all that kind of stuff. And the reason part of the reason we went down was the Galway goalkeeper at the time was going out with a neighbour of ours that he eventually married and all that kind of stuff. But I remember looking at this stuff. John Connolly actually was playing Cyril, the first of the Connollys in that particular match. And as you said, guys, a second ago, looking at it, you think to yourself, like, fair play to these lads, but they're at nothing, kind of, you know. So it was kind of weird, you know.
Yeah, it was. But even in our time, like when we came kind of fairly good, you play Tomás, you the first round would be against all Ireland B winners. Let's say Westmeath, Antrim, but they'd have under 4 or 5 men. And would you believe it, like for a lot of the game, because you'd like to be up for the game very much now, you'd eventually beat them. And if you won by 30 points, well, they were considered no good. And if you won by 2 points or a pint, you were no good. But like, you still had to jump the fence. They'd always brought up a good show because they had their final one and they had their team fields. They had a good cut at it, like, you know. Now you get over it, but like there was always room for a shot as well.
Cyril, can I ask you, how did you get involved with the whole thing? What was your motivation for getting involved with Galway hurling?
I suppose the first thing happened would be in UCG, or UCG, that MUIG now. But in there, like, as you know, you had fellas from everywhere, and there was a lot of cadets, army cadets from Cork, Kilkenny, Tip, and you'd be all hurling mad. And when we were hurling together, you had Joe McDonald there, you had Joe Connolly, you had Pat Flory, you had Kieran Britt and all these guys. But you begin to realise, like, that there wasn't much difference between the Cork jersey, Tip jersey, and a Galway jersey when they were all in the same NUIG jerseys. You know what I mean?
I do.
When you became captain then, that time of the college, right, in the second or third, you had to do the training yourself. The coach, you kind of organised everything yourself. So from there, in 73, 11, they had J.P. Cusick, who was over a minor team in Galway, and he was manager. He asked me would I help him out the coaching, which I did. We beat, I think, by a point by Kilkenny in the final, and that kind of started the college thing kind of started, because you were rubbing shoulders, like, everyone would be talking about winning the Lee McCarthy, like, you know. And to us Galway lads, we heard about it, which was 1923. There was nothing about winning. But then you had Niall McInerney coming in, you had Joe McDonough coming in, you had Joe Connolly coming in, you had a Burke lad from Limerick, you had fellas from all over the shop coming in. So you begin to realise, like, they were all good, but there was very little difference, only that they had more belief, really, like, and they were coming from a winning tradition, which we weren't coming from. And that was a big issue, really, at the time.
Can I ask, sir, I mean, in terms of a playing background, did you play? Were you a corner forward? Were you a midfielder? Or were you a corner back?
No.
He was a footballer.
Centre forward, full forward. I remember one year playing UCC, tell you how little I knew, and I was corner forward, all right? And 11 of them, and Jody Spoon was full forward. And it was UCC, the good team, a lad called Paddy Barry, I didn't know at the time, was full back. And Spoon said to me just at the start, he said, you go in full forward and I'll go corner forward, all right? And like any high ball came in, so Paddy Barry cleaned me. Like, he was very, very good. You know, but it wasn't until it was over, I realised all the chance I had was bring him out and kind of run him around, but no chance. Spooner knew the guy and he knew what he was doing. Like, so
yeah, but you didn't bring yourself out as a third midfielder like you did in later years or anything like that, no?
Wasn't fit.
I had to get that in.
Good man yourselves, yeah. Come along, sir, to, let's say, just the mid-70s, just to kind of put a point on it. Did you see a change at that point in Galway hurling?
Well, then you see in 72, we call it Iggy Clark's team, Andy Fenton, these guys, they won an under-21 at the time. Now, I college team was in the mid-70s. I saw a change coming, like Winner Fitzgibbon would kind of win the round, kind of in finals playing against. That time now, there was only a few university teams. Like, for example, a minute and a half back line of Sean Stack, Sean Silk, and Iggy Clark. That was right. Like, you know, it wasn't as spread out as it is now. You become kind of against strong teams. And in the mid-70s, I was asked him to coach an under-21 team that were well beaten the year before and well beaten as minors. But when we got them working together, they turned out to be a powerful team and we actually won. And from then on, you were kind of getting thinking, look, what, these guys are good enough to be under-21. It's very near senior. And it's like you had the John Connolly and these as around Niall McInerney. If you could ever put the two of them kind of more or less together, you'd be there about, or you felt you would anyway.
And then moving forward from that towards the end of the 70s, because you were, as you said yourself, you were close enough. You weren't too far off. Like Galway were in the mix, if you like, but not quite there.
Yeah, well, I'd like to get 79. We played Kilkenny in the final. Babs Keaton was the coach. There was a Sean Conroy, chairman of the selectors, and I was doing the training, the physical training. And we're beat by Kilkenny, a very wet day. And we there was a reception in the Green Isle. You're probably out of Michael yourself. And the lads were piped in, but I felt, no, I wasn't, you know, we were all down now, but I felt I was the only one that was hurting. Like, I was sober as a judge. The boys were kind of drinking, you know, using.
One or two glasses, certainly, yeah, that's all.
I remember going back to a flat in Dublin and I said to my mate at the time, Roger Cannon, who died since tragically, I said, I'll tell you one thing, Roger, if I'm ever involved again, no, that was a big if, I was in Dublin, I wasn't thinking of being involved. I said, if I ever am, I said, And we get that far and we lose. I said, every one of them lads will be crying with disappointment because I'll have driven them to the ground. You know what I mean? I had this thing in my head, like, are they hurting at all? Which was the wrong way to look at it. But I felt I was the only one hurting. You know what I mean? Now, if did I think I'd be back in the following year, because I was in Dublin and, you know, I didn't think I'd be even nominated. But there was no queue for the job. I remember there was no
queue. Sure. But I think, sir, he had beaten Cork in 75 All-Ireland semi-final, and he beat him in 79 All-Ireland semi-final as well, after Cork winning 3-0 76, 77, 78. So that was a good achievement in itself, wasn't it?
It was, you're right, Tomás, but it wasn't looked at that way here. It was, but we're saying, the same old story. Here we go again, no All-Ireland. Like, at this stage now, we'd say the John Connollys and these guys, the Sean Sears, they were moving on. Like, they were getting very mature. But anyway, I got a call, and I think it was a Tuesday morning or Monday morning, the school in Dublin, to know would I let my name go forward to become manager of the Galway team. Now, there was no contest. You know, there was no queue, there was no contest. And sure, I kind of said yes without even thinking of traveling. Noel Tracy, or Amy Lortmerson, he was high up on the board at the time, later becoming a TD, and you become very involved. And I knew what I was going to do. You know what I mean? I knew from 79. The team, I had a big advantage that way, and I was really going to change that in the sense I was going to make them feel, even if they mightn't be, I was going to make them feel that they were going to be the fittest team in the country. I believe we had Ireland, but I didn't ever felt we were kind of fit enough. I make them believe the big thing was to change the mindset that we had the right to win as much as everyone else. Or say, if you take over Cork, you're expected to win. If you take over Kilkenny, you're expected to win. Whereas Galway, take them over, it's okay if you need okay. I was trying to change the whole mindset that we wanted to win and we're going to be fit enough to win. Now, that was the big thing in my head coming from the year before. I had that advantage.
You mentioned there, Cyril, just on a slightly different note, if you like, the day, the night in the Green Isle Hotel in 1980 when you won the All-Ireland and all that kind of crack. Just as I said, this is just a personal kind of thing. But back through the 70s, I was working tomorrow in the Tuam Herald. And back in the 70s, Galway, Jesus Christ, you couldn't have so much more luck unless you bought it. You know, they lost to Offaly in, was it 71? They lost to Cork in 73. This is the footballers, by the way.
Just say 73 in football, yeah.
Yeah. In 74, they lost to Dublin. In 75, as Cyril mentioned, they lost to Kilkenny. And in 79, lost. And I used to get tickets from the county board in Galway to go and attend all these events and all that kind of stuff. And I got the tickets for 1980, Cyril, and I gave them to a friend of mine. And I said to myself, I'm not going to another one of these shite things. You know, I found myself, Cyril, at about 12 o'clock at night outside the doors of the Green Isle trying to blag me way in.
When you win, it's lovely. But as you say, when you lose, even coming home to the reception, and you get a great reception, but God, it's the last place you want to be, like, when you lose. Like, you know.
Sure, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone, we want to get that, like, you know.
I know, yeah. Talk to me, Cyril, about 1980, because clearly this was such a special year in Galway hurling, in Galway history, if you like. Talk to me through that year and that setup that got you there.
Well, you see, I had Inky Flaherty as selector. Now, he'd be the older regime, but everyone said to me, you won't be able to work with him. But I found him brilliant. He never bothered me at all. Like, you know, he wanted the best for the team, and whatever I wanted, he let me bang away. Bernie O'Connor, I knew well, and he kind of knew the book, you know what I mean? So I remember having the first meeting with the players and in Athenry. Now, you'd know the old galvanised dressing room in Athenry. We had a little puck round on Saturday. I chaired the meeting. I sat on the table myself in it. Got every fella to talk. Some guys would be well able to talk, more guys, but I made every lad speak, you know. And I was kind of tearing it and kind of drawing it out of fellas. But anyway, I never forget, PJ Malai was in a corner of the dressing room. He'd always sit down in the same corner. And the next thing, he hopped up of a sudden. We were coming to the end, and he caught me by off guard, and he lifted me off the table up into the air. And he said, "Are you telling us that we'll win the All-Ireland?" I said, "I'm telling you, we'll win the All-Ireland if you do what I say." I said, "We'll be the fittest team in the country. We have the hurling. We will win." Now, this starting from there. So that broke up the meeting. So that was the first kickoff. Now,
what time of the year was that, sir? When did you have that meeting? Was that post Christmas time or January, well, February before a National League, or
end of October, November.
End of October.
Yeah. But no, it was easy said. But like, I knew what I wanted from the year before. You know, I knew the panel, I knew the kind of guys that I wanted, and I had my mind kind of made up on certain fellas. Now, maybe it was wrong or right, but like, when you win, everything's right. If you lose, everything's wrong. But like, I knew what I kind of had to have, and I headhunted certain. I went out to Michael Keneally's house. He'd been dropped the year before, and I stayed in his house until he agreed to come back. Oh, he's still a gentle giant from himself and his wife Marie, and he said, I can't go back, my back is at me. We talked until 3 or 4 o'clock, we had tea, biscuits, the whole lot. In the end, I persuaded him and said, look, I'll have you training on your own. We'll do little bits, don't be hard on your back. No, he still had to do it. But like, I needed him back because I just felt he was part of the jigsaw. Tomorrow, on the big day tomorrow, he'll be very good. On the ordinary day, he wouldn't be good, but God, the big day, he'd be unreal. Oh, he was a big man. So
he's like, a huge man, Mike. He was a huge man. Yeah, a huge man.
Yeah. Like, when he straightened up, he didn't have to jump up with the ball at the crossbar. Just landed into his, you know, that kind of, but I got him back. I had him little pieces back. And the first training session we had, real training session, was on the 6th of January. Now, that time, the 6th of January was a holy day. It was an obligation day, like it was a day off. And I had contacts with UCG. So we played UCG in a match in Carrickmore. Very wet, very mucky. And we did the physical stuff afterwards, and I trained both teams. Now, what they didn't know, I put them on the, like, that time for an All-Ireland, now you wouldn't be getting many handouts. You might get a bit of a tracksuit, but other than that, you wouldn't be getting stuff like, you know, like, you know. So, trained away for about half an hour afterwards, and I made sure it was donkey work, covered book, everything else, into the dressing rooms. And I had the groundsman told, had the showers on, but no hot water. Now, I was skipping up. They could, because the boys, like, they wouldn't have as much gear. So, of course, when they came in, they went straight for the shower and cold water. And I was skipping after. I said, that fucker, where has he gone to? Like, but I was trying to say to them in my own way, like, afterwards, the training is going to be different, lads. It'll be dog rough. You're going to go through hell for a while. That's what's going to take, you know. So, like, that was the start of the rough training. We did sessions in Fahey's Field, and I knew the other players would be getting on to Inky Flaherty, who didn't know, and they said to me, he'd kill us. And I'd say to Inky, don't mind, they can die there if they want to, they'll join in again, they're okay, don't pass marks. Like, the crew, it'd be considered, I don't know, it'd be considered cruelty to animals now if we did what we did, but like, just to get into their heads, make them that were fit, you know, really fit. Like.
So you broke all Croke Park rules by going back post pre-Christmas with your team meeting, and then 6th of January, on a holy day, you took the team training.
But there was no rules that time, I remember. There was rules. No. But like, we played the league and tried out a lot of the 78 under 21 fellas. We played Limerick in the league, and I think the bees over 20 points or more above in Limerick. But we had a different team out when the championship came there. But we kind of knew what we wanted. See, a lot of people thought it was the same 1979 team that played in 1980, but it wasn't really. The backs were really changed. Like, Mike Keneally was in goals. Jimmy Cooney, Lorcher Merson was cornerback. Seamus Coleman was on wing back. You know, we had kind of a different, was a different to the team in the backs, especially, you know.
Are you suggesting there, Mulcahy, that you guys down in Cork were obeying the rules?
Oh. Hey, Michael, they're the
Cork. All the time, Michael. We went back in March, getting ready for the season, right? And no gyms, but we did make sure we had a bit of hot water. Wasn't the hottest, like, it was probably lukewarm, but yeah. Ah, we did, yeah.
Water after that, though. There's only for one session.
Ah, brilliant. But can I just say, just in terms of 1980, sir, right? Well, anytime you see 1980 and you see the final, and obviously the speech by Joe Connolly himself and stuff like that, it does get the hairs on the back of the neck standing up. For me, looking at it, because it was an incredible occasion. And, you know, the old Croke Park, the crowd that was there, Jesus, you had fellas climbing on the wire, getting over the wire to get onto the field. It must have been something special for yourself and for the team, obviously.
It was. It was very, very big, like, and should have come home with them that night, like, you know. And, you know, that time Tomasi used to meet the next day in the hotel in the Burrs. Like, we hadn't ever been used to going to a hotel winning. You know, we were used to going losing, but not winning. The team was like, and it was unreal. Like, we celebrated for the full winter. That was going to happen anyway. You see, by the time we won Tomas, that team was moving on. the bones of that team were at the end of their career rather than at the beginning of it. Like, and the slowly but surely the thing changed in the game, like, because you had the under 21s and minors coming through. Like Mike referred to the 83 team, a lot of them last game won an under 21 in 86 and progressed onto the senior team.
You had, by the way, Cyril, just mentioning it there, a couple of weeks ago down in St. Thomas's in Galway at the championship, you had a special presentation for the 83 team.
Yeah.
You were on Brogdon.
Yeah, it was coach. John Fahey was the manager. I was asked to be in coach and select with the boys, and we had a lovely setup. We had three priests, so we couldn't go wrong. And we had the other. We drew the semi final, and the final was against Niall Quinn's Dublin. Now, we had a strong team, which was a terrible day. But it was a great. We had been in a lot of finals, Michael, up to that, and never won one. And once we won one, the flood gets open. But we had a lot of very good hurlers in it. Like, when you look back now, John Commons came off the team. Sean Tracy, Malone, Jerry McInerney, Joe Cooney, Anthony Cooney, a terrible lot of fellas came, you know, through that team and afterwards, like, and, you know, they were the backbone of the mid-80s panel of the senior team.
Sure, yeah. Let's walk you forward because, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, the success that Galway had through the 80s and not just the All-Ireland you won, but also other stuff like league, the cups, the railway cups as they were at the time, sir. Yeah. And so forth. Like, essentially, you guys were winning everything.
Even top of the railway cup that time in 1980, we won the first railway cups, 1940s, and that time the railway cup was big. You know,
that's the point. Yeah,
I remember going back to Bannisloe, to the hotel in Bannisloe, what do you call it, Hayden's Hotel, that time, to the meeting place all the time. And like, sure, we had a great night in it, and the lads filling the cup. And when you start drinking out of the cup, they couldn't drink it right because they didn't realize that there was actually a hole in the base of the cup somewhere. So when they turned it off, when it was a big occasion, they wouldn't realize that. Now, it was a big thing to win the Railway Cup, was big.
But sir, that Railway Cup then, was that predominantly Galway? Was there representation from?
We'd have.
Roscommon or Mayo? Or,
yeah, we'd usually have.
There was one Mayo guy on it, I think, Tomás, wasn't there? So.
Yeah.
O'Henry. Great hurler. Great hurling family. Yeah. They would be strong hurling household or house area the whole time. Turina would be good the whole time at hurling. Very strong. Yeah. And he was a very good hurler. Would get on any team. But he was kind of more or less on the panels the whole time. Like, you know, more or less. I would say. But it was a big competition that time.
It certainly was. Going forward, sir, in terms of the Sunday game, because obviously, as a successful manager and high profile and all that kind of stuff, I suppose you were an obvious candidate from one point of view to come in and join us on the Sunday game panel and all that. How did you feel about that? And the reason that I'm asking you this is because back in the day when you were the Galway manager, you were very, how will I put it? Defensive.
Anti-RTE.
Yeah.
No. Cyril was slightly defensive. He wouldn't give you too much. He wouldn't give much away, kind of, and all that kind of stuff, you know. So,
yeah. Well, you'd be defensive of the team. I would always feel like that, you know, compared to Cork and Tomás and these people west of the Shannon would be shy if they're good or kind of nearly apologize.
Cyril's family is shy.
You know, to feel confident and okay, maybe not give much way to pay, like papers and that. Like, as you know, they write up a lot if he's going well, and if he's going bad, you know, just the other way. And you have to be able to take all that, like, you know. So, like, it's even got tighter since then, Michael, since our time, because now they're not allowed.
Oh, sure.
But like that, like we were coming from a losing position, if you know what I mean. Like, and that, like, it was to change the whole mindset. And as well as you say, maybe not give too much away. We're going to the Sunday game, for I loved what I was doing. As Tomás would tell you, it's much easier to do it outside the wire than inside the wire. It's a different game altogether. Like, when you'd like the game, the Sunday game wasn't the job. I just loved where we were at. Like, I'd be going to the games anyway, so it was really kind of enjoyable. I loved every minute of it.
The thing about it is, like, what I loved about that scenario, a lot of people talk about the football thing, like, Colin Moore with Pat Spillane and Joe Brawley and all that kind of stuff. But you guys on the hurling were in my personal view, equally as good, guys like yourself, Cyril, and then subsequently, I suppose, others that joined in, and all the rest of it, kind of, you know, and Tomas, obviously, being one of them, and all
thanks,
that kind
Michael.
Of stuff. Yeah, but I mean, like, there were great panels. I have to say, I always enjoyed working on those panels simply because I knew that I was working with guys who knew what they were talking about, who had the credibility and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I'm sure you guys, the both of you, I hope, must have enjoyed being involved in all that as well.
Yeah, well, I must admit, like, say, Tomas there, like Gerard Lucknan, you know, Sheedy, Denton, yeah. These guys, Michael Dykens, they were great cracked as well. Like, we had great fun. You know what I mean? The show was, you had to do research. You were at the match. You had your notes. You had your, you had all the technicians helping you. But outside of that, we had great banter as well. And like, sure, with Lucknan, he'll be cutting across and daughter. He'd be cutting across as well. And he might say, well, we're going to fight about tonight. Like, you always knew he was going to be, you know, he was going to go the opposite way. Like, but that's what you want. I felt that's what you wanted. And it, like, you'd know from talking to people down the country that they enjoyed the show.
Oh, geez, 100%. No question about that whatsoever.
Yeah, Michael, but I think as well, look, you must take a lot of credit in that as well, because you gave us the bit of the leeway and the freedom to go and express ourselves, right? As Cyril said, we didn't have as much as the laptops or the iPads or the iPhones or the technology side. And it was very much off the cuff in terms of you expressing yourselves and your thought in the game. And if it meant having a bit of crack and having to go off each other, like, it came to the stage, I think, between the three of us, Cyril and Jura, at one stage, we were kind of half afraid to talk before the match, because if you give away any information, either Cyril or Lucknan was going to be the first to spin it out. Right? And so you kept your mouth shut as much as you could, so that you know you might be able to get one over the two lads when you go to studio. But you were brilliant at that, and you could sense that, and you let it go, you know? And I think, like, I think, sir, you were on, I mean, the day of Marty interviewing Brian Cody in the dressing room.
Yeah.
I mean, that was priceless. I mean, that was gold television. And, Michael, you enjoyed that yourself, but we couldn't be consoled in studio. And I think that came across to the viewers on the other side. Yes, we were very serious about hurling. We were very serious talking about the game. But there was a bit of fun, and there was a smile, and there was a bit of crack there as well.
But I'd always think that. They'd be asking us, what's Michael Lester like? And I say, look, he's the conductor of the orchestra. He conducts where we go. Like, he dictates the whole lot, really. And as you say, Tomas, like, you know, Michael was the master of the, you know, he kind of puts down the lines where to go, and he just let us kind of bang away. But he still had to say it and control the whole lot, which you had to, well, like, otherwise you get out of hand altogether.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, is that, and this, by the way, is not clapping myself on the back. I sincerely hope it isn't. But if some of you guys, I always insisted, as you guys know, that you didn't wear earpieces.
Yes.
Because I didn't want you guys listening to what the director of the program or the producer of the program had to say. And that's not the application now, because if you watch anything on television sports-wise, you can see they all have earpieces and they all have to listen into whatever. I insisted that you guys never wore any of that kind of stuff. That, in other words, the only person that you listened to, or right or wrong, was me. You can't believe sometimes some of the shite that I used to have to listen to in my ear.
I think we got a smile with a first hand of that in terms of when you did a bit of folk commentary. When you did a bit of folk commentary. And you're the headphones
on. I know.
My Jesus. And the outside broadcast would tell you, oh, make a comment quick, right? You know, so, but no, it was a relaxing look. And that's not taken away from the modern where television has moved on, analysis has moved on, and you got to accept that. But back then, you really looked forward going into studio, and you had the crack. And traveling around the country, Michael, it was the best thing ever, right? That you weren't in the studio in Dublin. You were going to Turles, you were going to Killarney, you were going to wherever, you were going to Limerick, and it was absolutely fantastic. Fantastic.
Oh, really, I absolutely, Tomas, loved every second of that, because that happened back in the early 90s. And And when Sky Television started doing the Premier League and all that kind of stuff, Tim O'Connor was the head of sport at the time in RTE. And Tim called me into the office one day and he said, I think we'll go live with GAA coverage. I've got a bit of an agreement with Croke Park to do this kind of stuff. And I said to myself in my head, there is absolutely no way this is going to work. You know, it might work for Premier League or because it's an international product and all that kind of stuff, you know. But anyway, Tim was dogmatic and went ahead with it. And sure, look, it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to GAA. And the Sunday game and still is kind of, you know, so it's been fabulous.
Yeah, look, even with Cyril, we were all kind of maybe came up with sayings, right? Either Cork, he's very good by, or you know, or liked. And Cyril, you'll be kind of came famous for the Rusty Erling. And as such, I might meet someone else and it's it. How is as such? I said, wait on about your buddy on the TV, right? You know, Risty Hurling. Yeah. And the toy you were wearing was shocking. Jeez, where'd you get a toy? You know, you got that, Cyril, as well, I presume.
Yeah. I couldn't hang myself with the goddamn tie. I mean, it was more relaxed about it. But what Ross says there, that Michael, is very true. Like, we really enjoyed it. Like, we're coming from a hurling in. But I'd often go back to the stats, even now. I'd be saying to the fellas, if you need stats on the sideline, you shouldn't need stats looking at an hurling game or a football game. You should have it in your head. And if you're going to have to need stats, they're okay for the Tuesday night, but not during the game, because lads have so many lads in the rear now, I don't know how to operate at all. I'm talking about the minters on the sideline, like, but they're all wired up, like going to Mars or something.
Ah, sure. Yeah, look, but as Tomás said there a second ago, I suppose, like, lads, everything moves on, kind of, you know, and it doesn't mean that we were better than today is or whatever the case is.
No, none, absolutely not.
Things change,
and you got to accept change, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I can't actually fully believe that it's almost 5 years since I retired from the Sunday game, you know. So it's kind of weird. But anyway.
At least you got the opportunity to retire, Michael, yeah.
Well, I was a full time employee in RTE, so I came to the age of 65, 4 years actually it is, and that was it. Like, it was as simple as that. I knew in advance, like, when my time was up. So they didn't get rid of me. They probably would have, but anyway.
You're laughing, sir. I like your laugh. Yeah.
But anyway. So, Cyril Farrell, what's the crack these days? What are you up to?
Would you believe, since I left RT, look, I'm busy doing nothing, if you know what I mean. There's the neighbour might up here as a few old horses, and I tip around and give them in the morning. But, like, go with
me. Are you riding out the horses in the morning, Cyril?
I'm not able. I'm barely able to walk them up. I mind riding them up. But, like, I've been involved a lot with Galway Bay doing co-commentaries or analysis of the local hurling scene. With the county gone, the hurling, you know, there's a split season, and then with the county team. So I do all the matches the whole time. So Galway, we're soon starting again, the league and then the championship, and then the club's thing starts again. And the club is very active in Galway, which is all over now, like, you know. So you wouldn't feel it start. There's a few months kind of now that it's gone quiet. But then after that, in with Galway Bay, and like with that, they cover all the Galway matches and all the club games, giving white cover. The streaming, Michael, has become very popular down here anyway. It has become really, like, if your club is involved, you go to the match. But if they're not involved, the neutrals, they stay at home and watch it and enjoy it. Like, you know, it's a great system to have, and it seems to be going very well.
Oh, 100%. There's no question about that. Listen, guys, fantastic to talk to both of you again.
I've only one complaint now, Mr. Lester, right? And you're the host, right? And you mentioned the 70s and you mentioned the 80s, but you went through the 80s very quick.
The 90s.
Well,
1990. No, you went through it very quick now, and look, that's okay.
Hang on a second. I didn't go through it that quick. Because in actual fact, if you count back the number of All-Irelands Galway won in the 80s.
Yes.
As I said earlier on, National Leagues, Railway Cups, as we spoke
Railway
about.
Cups, yeah.
That. What's your
right,
Silence on the other end of the phone from Gork, obviously. So that was the end of that story.
Yeah. But you, I was only a reference point. That's all.
Well, thank you for your contribution. Yes. best of luck to the fellow who will be taking over from you. But anyway,
older than that.
Ah, so my things never change. Relax. That's been signed to Sunday Game Studio. It's great to hear.
It's great to hear you, boys. God bless.
Listen, lad, thank you so much for talking to us. We'll see you all, folks, hopefully again on the next episode of the Game on Sunday podcast. And looking forward to that. But again, to our special guest here today, to Cyril Farrell. Cyril, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Good to talk to you, Cyril. Best of luck.
Israel's mine, lads.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.